You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
We have just one more month of summer, but there's still a lot of time to grow fruits and vegetables and flowers and herbs. Gerard Lordahl, director of the Open Space Greening Program at Grow NYC, joins us now to talk about gardening into the fall, and we will be taking your calls about all your gardening concerns. If you have any questions for Gerard, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at WMIC.org or on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Well, welcome back to our show, Gerard.
Thanks. It's great to be here, Leonard. Happy summer.
This summer's weather has been beautiful, cooler than we're used to. How has it been for gardening?
Well, it has been a good year. I'm getting photographs from people like Ina McPherson in Bed-Stuy sending me beautiful pictures of her heirloom tomatoes. And yesterday I was out with about 100 families on Governor's Island. We were picking royal burgundy bush beans, and there was a bumper crop. We're picking basil. There are gardeners that are reporting that the crops are doing really well, low on the pest and disease, however, a little cool.
A few years back, we were hit by a major tomato blight, but doesn't seem to be here this year. These things just can disappear?
Yeah, I mean, by concerted efforts on the part of the scientists, the researchers, the gardeners, they're coming up with varieties of vegetables and herbs and flowers that are resistant to these diseases.
Without
they're
doing educating, GMO?
Yeah, they're educating people about cultural practices that you can do to prevent these diseases and insects. Like for your listeners, not planting the same crops or tomatoes in the same spot every year is a good thing.
We also seem to have had a reasonable amount of rainfall. But not too many hot days. Are heat waves and really hot temperatures bad for plants?
Well, the fluctuation, from what I understand in my experience in the gardens, there are 600 community gardens throughout the city, and it's more the fluctuation in the temperatures that throws the plants off, or the drastic change in moisture in the soil. That's why we encourage mulching, because that keeps a tempered soil and also retains the moisture in the soil.
Mulching all year round?
Yeah, it's a good idea to keep mulch in the garden all year round. It protects in the wintertime as well. And we encourage that with compost, with bark chip, with lawn, with newspaper, grass clippings. Mulching really does conserve water. It tempers the soil, keeps weeds down, which can be a problem this time of year as well in the garden.
Are there things that we can still be planting now?
There are, and that your listeners, when I'm here in the summer, I often recommend August planting. So if your listeners can keep in mind, we've got 60 to 90 days left of growing season. So August, many of the gardeners know in the city, is the time to plant from seed or transplants, things like spinach, kohlrabi, kale, Chinese cabbage, turnip. These are plants that take between 50 and 80 days to grow.
But mostly leafy vegetables.
Leafy vegetables and things that are cold tolerant, because we'll be going into the fall, and things like collards and kale and spinach, they could all take the cool weather.
A lot of people are growing tomatoes, and there seems to be a bumper crop this year. How do you know when it's exactly the right time to pick something like a tomato?
Right. Well, because we have so many of these wonderful varieties of heirloom tomatoes, you cannot say anymore, wait until the tomatoes turn red and then pick them. Many people feel that tomatoes taste the best when they mature fully on the vine. So you can't say pick them when they're red, because now we have green zebra tomatoes that are never going to turn red, or the yellow. So you want to refer to each variety, and you can usually tell when the color comes to its peak, or there's a ripeness in the tomato that you get. So it depends on that particular variety.
But it's not just red. It's usually a deeper red.
That's red, right. Yeah, right. And now there's the purple reds, and there are all the variations. There are the yellow tomatoes. So you can no longer go by color. You have to go by the ripeness of the fruit. And remember, some fruits can ripen off the vine. So if you do pick your tomatoes too early, you know that they could ripen off the vine. Whereas if you pick that cucumber or the watermelon off the vine, it's not going to continue to ripen.
A staff member wonders, because this has happened in her garden, what do you do if you have mushrooms popping up in your container garden?
Oh, that's a great question. And I wanted to talk to some of your listeners about herbs who are growing them, might be curious to know. Mushrooms bring out the idea that your soil is acidic. And
would it have come from her compost?
It can. I mean, or mushroom spores are carried by birds and insects, so a variety of places, but they flourish in acid soil. So it's usually an indicator that your soil is what we refer to as sweet or low on the acid scale of 0 to 14.
So that's not good.
No, it's good for acid-loving plants.
Oh.
But if you have herbs, if you're growing herbs in a container, they're not so great with acid soil. They like it on the alkaline side. So get a teaspoon of garden lime from the garden center and sprinkle a little lime on top of those mushrooms. That will take care of them, and it'll also adjust your soil pH.
Are they actually bad for the plants, or do they coexist
happily? Well, you don't want a lot of competition in a container. You know, I see mushrooms growing in my own containers in my little postage stamp garden in Brooklyn, and they're not detrimental unless they take over, but generally that doesn't happen.
Should we fertilize plants while they're growing?
No longer is it advisable in August to fertilize most of your crops. Well, actually, let me rephrase that and say trees and shrubs should not be fertilized. Roses, things that have to survive the winter often are not fertilized this time of year, or if you are fertilizing, make it your last fertilizing of your roses, your fruit trees, your evergreens, your shrubs. In the vegetable garden and the flower garden, it's often recommended to do a side dressing, which means that you would do a quick liquid feed of a fish emulsion or a compost tea, because you're producing lots of fruits and flowers and you want to give those vegetables and flowers an extra boost. But don't fertilize your herbaceous or your woody stuff, because it may create new growth that'll get damaged in the wintertime.
But you can put compost.
Compost is excellent. If you come out to visit our learning garden on Governor's Island with Earth Matter as our partner, you'll see a compost production sponsored by the Department of Sanitation, where people are bringing their green market food scraps to the markets, which are being picked up and then composted on places like Governor's Island with the Department of Sanitation, and then redistributed throughout the city. So come and see the composting process on Governor's Island on the weekends, and it's pretty amazing.
My guest is Gerard Lordahl, director of the Open Space Greening Program at Grow NYC, and we're inviting your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter. And let's go to one of those calls. Mike from Lake
Mohawk.
Mohawk. Well, you can't imagine how it was written on my computer screen. But okay, go ahead.
No worries. Yeah, really, really enjoying the topic today. Thanks for coming on, Gerard. I had one question. I just started to get into planting herbs and some lettuce and mescaline salad and things like that. And specifically on the basil, I've been noticing what looks like kind of bites out of the leaves, and just looking for a natural way to possibly combat that, either something to spray or maybe put something in the soil itself.
Sure. Basil is one of the herbs that I wanted to mention. If you're growing containers or if you want to start with herbs, basil and parsley are the good way to go. Just a reminder, if you're trying to start parsley from seed, you have to soak the seed beforehand overnight, or else it will be difficult to germinate.
That was my problem.
Not seeing your basil, I would guess that there's a couple of things. Snails and slugs love basil, and they'll often come out at night when you don't see them and chew them up. So if you tend to see snails and slugs in your garden around your basil, put sand or oyster shells or diatomaceous earth, any of those rough substances around the basil. All those mucilaginous creatures like slugs, snails, they cannot walk on that, and they'll avoid your plants.
And the basil is not affected by
no,
sand being on
no,
top of the soil?
No, in fact, the diatomaceous earth actually helps. So cracked shells, anything like that. So that's one way. Or you could use the commercial products of snail bait, if that's what it is. Japanese beetle, sometime attack basil and cause that cutting. But basil's pretty hardy. It needs 6 hours of sunlight. It's easy to grow. We grow it at the farm and in community gardens all over the city. It likes alkaline soil, as I said, and you want well-drained soil.
And it's great. You pick the basil, make pesto, or you put on a salad or whatever. And then the next day, it seems like the whole plant is recovered and you got lots of new leaves.
That's what we love about basil. And don't forget, there's not only the Genovese basil, the Italian basil. There's also the Thai basil that we see quite a bit. And there are lots of different varieties. There's purple basil that we've grown in the garden that does really well.
Lemon.
The lemon basil, yeah. The flowers are usually dried or eaten fresh, as you know. But it's a popular herb. And I would suggest for first-timers to definitely try it and pair it in the garden with tomatoes and peas. They're very good companions. So if you're growing tomatoes and peas, plant basil around it, and they seem to have a good effect on each other.
But you also mentioned lettuces and arugula. They tend to bolt if you don't pick them very quickly. And isn't that a problem? I mean, there's only so much lettuce you can eat at any given time. What happens when it bolts? Is that the end?
In fact, we were in the South Bronx at a roof garden, which gets full sun. And as you say, our lettuce, our cilantro, our parsley, it bolted very early because of all the intense heat on the roof garden. So here's a tip for your listeners. When you plant cilantro or parsley, try to put them in the shadier part of your garden because in a little shade, they're less likely to bolt. And then the other thing is, if they do bolt, you can't really control it if the weather gets very hot. But compost them, and have the mindset that every 3 weeks you're going to reseed for lettuce, for arugula, and for cilantro so that you don't have this bolting problem. But it's heat, and we can't control that in the summer.
Melanie from Brooklyn has written us to ask, my front yard gets indirect light, a lot of leafy trees, which also means there's lots of roots that have come into the yard. Can you suggest some native shade-loving plants, maybe even some that flower?
Yeah, sure. You don't want to damage the roots of the trees. So this is why often...
But if the tree is pretty far away, street trees are often pretty far away from the front that front yard, and yet at the same time, they can grow pretty long. Does it matter whether you damage it if it's 6 or 7 feet away?
You can. And you have to be careful that you don't do some severe damage where you might get the tree coming down. So people don't realize how easy some of these trees are under crazy situations where they don't have a large root system, and the few roots that you cut may be the major roots that cause that tree to come down. So be very careful. Consult professionals when you're doing anything, over 6 feet or so. But getting back to her question, I think that there are certain perennials that do well in dry shade. And I'm thinking of things like primula or epimedium or even brunnera.
Those are weird names.
Yeah, they are. They're Latin names. But common names would be things like foxglove as a biennial or astilbe or primrose, globe thistle, sedum is another one, or yarrow. So I've had some good luck with purple coneflower doing fairly well in a somewhat shaded area, although they prefer the sun. But I would say the best bets would be things like epimedium or hosta or daylily. These are plants that are very hardy, they're shade tolerant, and they'll survive under the shade of a large tree with those roots competing.
My guest is Lordahl, Lordahl, L-O-R-D-A-H-L, Director for Open Space Greening at Grow NYC. And we will continue our conversation. Take your calls at 212-433-9692 or answer your questions if you write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We are back with Gerard Lordahl, director of the Open Space Greening Program at Grow NYC, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at wnyc.org or on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And a listener has written to us from Halifax, Nova Scotia, leaving this message question on our show page. Any good references of what to do for tomato blight? Maybe there's none in New York, but we are having a late blight here in Halifax.
Oh, okay. So air circulation recommended. If it's to the point where you feel it's really no prisoners can be taken from this disease, then you should rogue them out. The plant should be actually pulled out. The scientists at Cornell, from what I read, were talking about how the plants are best to be removed because you can't really fix that problem. Removing yellow leaves from the bottom can stop the spread of the disease. Not planting tomatoes in the same area where they were planted the previous year or next year is a good way to help. Increasing air circulation around the tomato plants, removing the stem, the third stem in the middle, pruning out some of the leaves to increase air circulation, making sure that they're getting full sun, that they're not allowed to go into stress, water stress or anything like that. These are all things that you can do. Mulch them to not prevent drying out. So these are things that they're recommending, short of adding chemical controls. And in some cases, the blight was not controllable at all. But there are other fungal diseases that can be controlled with different chemical applications or using organics.
But if New York is any indication, maybe you won't have it next year in Halifax.
Right. I mean, think about really planting your tomatoes in a different location in the garden and maybe even sterilizing the soil non-chemically. That's another suggestion.
Susan from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air. But wait, before we do that, sterilizing the soil, what do you, put it in the oven or something?
Actually, that's not very feasible for most people, but making sure that if you are using containers in your tomato, with your tomato plantings, that you have weed, seed, and disease-free soil. When I was in school years ago, we used to have large soil sterilizers that actually were electric, that you actually cooked soil and used it over and over again, and that would remove. The criticism was that it also kills the beneficial insects, so we don't want to do that. But encouraging the good organisms is a way to go.
Could you put worms into that soil?
You want worms in your soil. That always helps. The castings increase the nutrition, and they tunnel through and allow for good water. It's all good with worms.
Susan from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, great show. I could listen to this show for hours. Earlier this year when you were on, you said because of something that happened in the previous winter, fig trees were going to do bad, and also hydrangeas, and I have both in my backyard. Now, the figs, I know they're so tiny, I'm not going to get any. Will they come back next year?
Yeah, that was quite a prediction, and we all knew it with the bad winter. A lot of damage from broadleaf evergreens, akuba, azalea, rhododendron, and figs in many of the community gardeners in gardens here in New York City. Figs that have been growing for 20 years were devastated by the winter, where you had 5 or 6 feet of twig branches just die back because of the constant cold temperatures that we had through the winter. However, at the base in the spring, you saw the figs emerging, which meant that the roots weren't dead because they were under the ground. However, anything above ground had been killed off by winter damage. So what Cornell is recommending for us in the Northeast, if you love your fig tree and you want to keep them growing, this year when the leaves drop, you want to prune back your fig tree and wrap it in newspaper. And then many people will use tar paper to wrap the outside of the newspaper.
It's 100 years old.
Yeah, it's too big to wrap. Then what you want to do is just be aware that some of those tall branches may die back in the winter. And in the spring, cut back what is not green. But you can get dieback. Put it in a protected area. Put up a windscreen. Mulch it. Water it.
Water. Quick question. My girlfriend's growing watermelon next door, and they're growing really big. What do you put onto them to make sure, like, they don't get all, like, mushed?
Yeah, you could get, I like that word, mushed. You could get straw. Straw would be the best thing, and many garden centers carry straw. Or you could put shredded newspaper, anything that'll protect it from coming into contact with the soil.
People are wondering whether you can use bubble wrap with the fig tree.
A lot of people don't like putting plastic in the garden, but if you pull it up at the end of the season, sure, bubble wrap would be a great, cushion.
Lindsay from Williamsburg, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I have a little garden in my backyard, and I recently heard that I might have some heavy metal toxicity issues that I'd be advised to have my soil tested. Is that true, and should I not be eating what I'm growing?
Well, we always have to be on lookout for making sure our soil is healthy, and we recommend to all gardeners to have your soil tested for lead and other heavy metals. Your cooperative extension office can help you here, or we use Cornell University and Amherst in Massachusetts. You could also go to our Grow NYC website, and we list in our Resilient Community Garden manual, which is available, a whole section on resources for soil testing. And some of them include, the University of Amherst and Cornell Cooperative Extension. You send a sample, and for a small fee, they will test your soil pH, or you could do it with a home test yourself.
But, Gerard, I have always been told that if you want to eat it, you should not plant it in New York City soil. You can plant flowers in it, but you should have pots. You can get large pots and put tomatoes or anything else in them, but that way you're guaranteed that the soil is going to be good because you're going to be buying
it
at a home gardening store.
That's what we've been doing.
Or raised beds are the other thing.
The issue is when you say New York City soil, what are you talking about? Who among us are gardening in native soil in New York City? A lot of it is not native soil. It's mostly construction debris. So in the beginning of the whole modern community garden movement, we were all building raised beds and bringing in highly, nutritious screen topsoil, because we knew that what we were growing in New York City was not the original native soil. So you have to bring in new soil, and most of our expenses in gardens around the city is bringing in new soil. So yes, have your soil tested. There is an issue. There can be. You want to make sure your pH is correct. Cornell University has a lot of information on washing your crops with a vinegar solution if you're concerned. Children under 6 should not eat leafy vegetables if there's an issue with heavy metals. We've been doing lots of surveys with Cornell and research scientists about community gardens where many of them were tested. And the areas where the edible vegetables were grown did not have these crazy levels of heavy metals. So it's important to be cautious.
And Lindsay, could you just use big pots or have raised beds?
I absolutely could for next year. I've just invested in a lot of vegetables that are growing beautifully right now, and so I want to make sure that I'm not throwing out potentially good veggies if I can eat them. But
right.
I'll definitely look into having my soil tested.
Yeah, and again, Cornell says if you have soil that you're concerned about, peel the root crops. Rinse your leafy vegetables off in a 1% vinegar solution and keep your pH between 6.0 and 6.8. If you do have heavy metals and your pH is correct, the pH binds up the soil. And the other thing is fruiting vegetables do not, like a tomato would not have these hazardous particulates in it, the fruit that we eat, because the heavy metals get caught up in the leaves of the fruiting plants like tomatoes, peppers, zucchini, and squash.
My guest is Gerard Loredal, director of the Open Space Greening Program at Grow NYC. And this is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. A listener says her garden was ruined after her yard was flooded during Sandy, and it hasn't come back the way that she thought it would by now. Mm-hmm. What should she do? Is it a matter of replacing the soil again?
We spent last winter writing a publication that's available to all your listeners, Leonard. It's a resilient New York City community garden guide, and you can get it from us free of charge from Grow NYC going to our website. And we specifically did this in response to the devastation of the community gardens that got, you know, suffered through Superstorm Sandy. We recommend soil testing. We recommend bringing in new, using recycled plastic lumber. And there are all these good tips on restoring your garden. And not only that, but pre-storm garden checklists. Things to do to prevent other, you know, these similar things from happening the next time. So go to our website.
Well, we have a link to it, by the way,
yes,
on our website as well.
So the Community Garden Guide for Resilient New York City Community Gardens would be very helpful. And it's all about mitigating storm damage.
Doug in Long Island has written in to ask, I have beautiful eggplants, but they're splitting open on their sides with seeds exposed on the surface. What's wrong? I think I'm watering regularly and evenly, so that probably is not an issue.
Yeah, that cracking, it sounds like the eggplants are not being harvested at the proper time. So for our eggplant lovers, there are all different varieties now, heirloom varieties, the long Asian eggplant. You want to harvest them before they get too large, and often they'll be cracking, and that sounds like what's happening.
You just left them on the vine too long.
Yeah, it sounds like that's what it is.
Another listener wants to know, when's the best time to prune evergreen hedging? Fall, spring, and does pruning season differ for things like rose bushes?
Yes, absolutely. Good timing of that question. Evergreens start to go dormant now. So the summertime right now in August is a good time to prune your evergreens. You don't want to prune many of your spring flowering plants, you know, further than the summer, because then you'll be removing the buds for next spring. So we recommend anything that blooms in the spring to be pruned after it blooms. But now is a good time to start thinking about your evergreens, and the best time to prune trees and other deciduous things are when the leaves drop. So wait a little longer on your deciduous trees, but evergreens are good to prune now, and this is a good time to prune the dead flowers on your bedding plants.
Another listener writes, we use Milorganite on our flowers, vegetables, and lawn. We also use it as a repellent for deer and find it very effective. But is there a downside to Milorganite?
I haven't heard the word Milorganite in quite a while. Milorganite, from what I understand, has the potential of, I would be cautious because Milorganite was produced based on municipal waste, and there was always an issue, as far as I know, about heavy metals with Milorganite. So that is a downside. And unless they've changed the formula, you should be very cautious because there's a potential for heavy metals there with your vegetables. So check the label, check the manufacturer, and be aware.
And I only recommend heavy metal for rock gardens. Okay, Jamie from Essex Falls, New Jersey.
Yes, great show, guys. Enjoying it. Two quick questions. One, I have Canadian thistle in my Pachysandra bed that is relentless. And the only thing that seems to kill it is Roundup, and I hate using Roundup. And the second question I had is that my beautiful maple tree, last two seasons, has been dropping its leaves early. And I'm concerned for its health. I'm wondering if you could give any guidance.
Sure. Okay. As far as your perennial weeds, like the Canadian thistle, you could continue to chop off the heads of these perennial weeds, and they're just going to come back laughing at you because they have a root system that you're not digging out. So to sufficiently eradicate these large rooted weeds that come back year after year, you have to dig out the root system as much as possible, or it'll continue to come back. Thistle is one of those. As far as the wilting, you know, in these, I've seen in myself in Brooklyn streets, because of those warm days, We had a lot of early leaf drop on certain trees. I don't know your exact situation. If there's a gas leak, you could get immediate leaf drop off a tree. If it's just gradual, it could be a pest or a disease, or it can be drought. But if you see new growth coming, not to worry. There is a certain amount of leaf drop. But mulch as much as you can. And that often, leaf drop is often a drought situation.
Okay. But you don't recommend using Roundup?
We don't use chemicals for any kind
of
treatment.
How do you guarantee that you have a fully organic garden?
Well, you read labels, and we just don't use any chemicals because we're dealing with so many children and we're dealing with lots of edible vegetables that we try to use cultural practices, biological control. And, you know, believe it or not, getting rid of all the standing water in your garden can get rid of quite a few pests and diseases. Think about removing
and mosquitoes.
Yeah. Think about removing all the leaves that drop in your garden. Doing good fall cleanup will prevent a lot of pests and diseases and can encourage more resistant varieties. The eggplant people, the tomato people who have blight, there are a lot of new varieties that are not GMOs that are resistant to viruses, nematodes, fungi, things like that. So look for those resistant varieties.
You brought a tube of something called Zanfel. Is this
some of the hazards? I wanted to just discuss, you mentioned to your gardeners, there are hazards of summer gardening. One of them is poison ivy. Another one, stinging nettles. Those of you who know stinging nettles, that burning from the weeds, the antidote for that is finding some dock in the garden and rubbing some dock between your hands, D-O-C-K, and getting rid of the burning sensation of stinging nettles. Poison ivy is tricky if you're highly allergic. They have some great things that you can use, like blocks that you put on before you go out into the garden that prevents the erucerol from attacking your skin and causing that itching and that blistering. Of course, this is for mild conditions. And there's a natural antidote known as jewel weed that's related to the impatience that can help you with your poison ivy. But that product that I brought is just a reminder to your listeners to put on your poison ivy block if you're highly allergic.
Some people are already saving seeds for next year because some things have gone through their cycle. What do you do when you're saving the seeds? You just put them in paper towel and...
It depends, but yeah, generally
you
want to keep the seeds, you want to keep them dry, dark, and cool, and you want to make sure you clean them off with any debris. You could go online and you could learn how to seed save. We do workshops on seed saving. You could seed save from your tomatoes. The thing is, you want to make sure you're saving seeds from your heirloom vegetables. That's the value of heirloom. Heirloom means that they're open pollinated. If you take a seed from a hybrid tomato plant, if you plant that seed, it's not going to give you the parent plant. Because a hybrid is a cross between two plants. But the beauty of open pollinated heirloom vegetables is that you can collect the seeds and plant them and get exactly what the parent was.
And when is planting time? There are some people who like to plant before the winter because they think it produces hardier plants.
Well, you could, some of those crops like spinach, you can do that with. There are cover crops that you could plant now that will do well in the wintertime, like you're suggesting, and overwinter. And then in the fall, you can do that with your green manure crops, your winter rye, your soybean, your vetch. But most people, like now, are collecting, they're letting okra, for instance, go to seed, and the pod gets very brown and heavy, and then they collect those seeds. Putting their tomatoes in a jar of water and shaking it and displacing the pulp and collecting the seeds, as you say, on paper towels, letting them dry. These are all done with heirloom varieties. Any of your crops, you let the fruit mature, and the seeds are best to collect when the fruits mature. You dry them out, and you put them in a place where it's cool, dark, and dry, and plant them next year.
We don't have a lot of time, but we've been getting a lot of calls about infestations, white fly, an infestation on crabapple tree, a bamboo issue. Are these all controllable in different ways?
They are. Again, cultural control, biological control, you want to try and clean up, and that will prevent some of those pest problems. You want to try and use biological control. If you have aphids or mealybugs, ladybird beetles, or commonly known as ladybugs, will eat them. There are a lot of predatory wasps that are good in the garden. Spiders eat other insects. So don't always jump to chemical control. Try to clean up the garden. Try to bring in other natural pests. Get rid of all your standing water. Use varieties that are appropriate and not susceptible to these diseases, and that will control some of the problems that you just mentioned.
A listener wonders, I'm seeing more fireflies in Brooklyn this year. Do they play any role in my garden?
I'm not a firefly expert.
They don't pollinate the way bees do or butterflies.
I know. We just love looking at them. Yeah. But, you know, we just need to learn to live with all our insects in the garden. And, you know, I don't know the details. I don't think they offer anything very specifically beneficial to our edible gardens, but we certainly love looking at them.
But we are seeing fewer butterflies this year, and there's also concern about the death of the bee population.
Right.
Does that mean that we're going to have problems with pollination in the years to come?
Well, what I read from the scientists, they're saying that from 2006, there's been a 30% decrease in the honeybee population. So a lot of people are aware of that. You see a lot more hives in the city. People are managing correctly these hives. The New York City Beekeepers Association is very involved. There are lots of community gardens that have beehives. So this is a concern. A third of our food comes from crops that need to be pollinated. Almonds, fruit trees, vegetables, these all need to be pollinated by the honeybee. So we have to protect our insects and not use these chemicals or there are mites, actually, that a lot of the problem with the bee and colony collapse disease is believed to be from this particular mite, the vora mite, that transmit parasites onto the honeybee, or the tracheal mite. So these are things that we need to learn more about and manage them in our community gardens and home gardens.
Now, Gerard, we couldn't get to all the calls, and a lot of desperate people out there. Can they get in touch with you?
Absolutely. And we have a lot of information on our website, which is for free. We have the garden calendar at grownyc.org in the garden section. We give out handy fact sheets on how to care for your garden throughout the year. We have the storm resilient brochure you could pick up. And we also have a brochure on creating green infrastructure in your garden. So go to grownyc.org. Or you could send me an email, my initial G as in Gerard, LORDAHL at grownyc.org. And we'll be happy to answer your questions.
And Gerard, thank you so much for coming by again. We'll probably see you in the early fall.
Happy gardening.